Welcome to KO to Prep Area. This is a podcast dedicated to the Dice Masters collectible card game, hosted by myself, Rico, and my sidekick,
JP.
All right, welcome to today's episode. Today's topics for today are going to be talking about basic team building strategies. The idea is that I'm going to give you some overview of what we think is our specific theories on characters, amount of dice, spread of cost characters, those types of things is what we're going to go into on today's episode. We'll get into more specific team builds on later episode, but for today's episode, this is what we want to discuss. Before we get into that, though, let's talk about our spotlight character of the day. We've chosen a couple characters that we want to talk about in specific detail, so that way you get an idea of who we're kind of looking at, who we like, why we like them, and so forth. So, to get started, let's go ahead and have JP tell you about who his spotlight character of the day is today. Everyone's favorite blue intellectual. Go ahead.
Yeah, Beast. I kind of touched up on him last episode, but he's still my favorite to start so far. So, specifically, the character Beast Mutate 666.
He's a popular one.
He is super popular. As I said before, I think blocking is a great mechanic. The other mechanic that I'm having a lot of fun with is drawing dice.
Yep.
I'm finding out that drawing dice helps you get your guys who are higher cost a lot faster. It's also, if you kind of want to swarm your team with your deck, it's a nice way to get a lot more characters out when you have more dice to roll.
And he's super frustrating to see against.
Yeah, he is, because, well, what he is, he doesn't have a high attack. The nice thing I specifically like him for is his dice is great. He's got two characters that have zero cost, so he's usually free to field,
right.
And the other one is just a one cost.
So there's no drawback to him dying, really.
Right, and he dies often, but that's fine because he blocks all incoming damage, he dies, he KOs your prep area, you get him again.
Right.
Plus, this specific mutate says, when Beast blocks, draw one die and place it in your prep area, which is fantastic. So you might be getting two extra dice. It means you're rolling six dice for your next turn, that's fantastic.
Yeah.
He's still got a shot at rolling Beast. He has on one level the asterisk that says instead draw two dice. Place one in your prep area and the other in your use pile, which is kind of another way of getting through your bag a little faster.
Right.
So unfortunately, sometimes you'll have two characters that you pull out. Have the bad choice of trying to choose one. But the reason I specifically like the Mutate 666 more than the others is because he's also two cost to field. The other one, there's some other powerful beasts. He's three cost, and the uncommon one, he allows you to gain life by knocking out a character who's level one. There's another guy who, every time he blocks, he gives you life, and if Beast is knocked out, he also damages your opponent for specific damage. But specifically, I just find this to be the best beast. He's allowed four max dice, and so far, he's my favorite this week.
Yep. I think the fact that he's a two cost, you can buy two of him in the first round.
Yeah, I love that.
You know?
Yeah.
It's super annoying to see him, you know, times two in the third round. You can see two beasts out there. It's hard to get through. And then when you do try to get through them, you're just giving your opponent more dice.
It's a stall tactic, because then it's, okay, if you want to attack me, go ahead. If you want to kill me, fine.
Right.
If you don't, okay, just sit there.
And we'll get into, you know, some later detail about global abilities and how you can force people to attack you into the beast, which is really
annoying. Yeah, he gets pretty disgusting.
The guy I want to talk about today is the green menace that everyone is having a problem with right now, the Green Goblin, specifically Gobby, the super rare. Now, I know he's a super rare, so a lot of people may not have him, but the people that do have him are causing havoc on all the rest of us that don't. I've played Gobby. I was lucky enough to have one. So I built the Gobby Firestorm deck that everyone's having a hard time with. And he's a great die, just all around. I actually like the other versions of him. The rare version, the Norman Osborn, is not as good as the common version, but I built a deck around Goblin Lord, the common version as well, which worked out pretty good. But today I want to talk mostly about Gobby. Gobby states he's a three-cost die. That's a villain. That states when fielded, Green Goblin deals damage to your opponent for each sidekick in the field. Count your sidekicks only. So, thing I love about him is that he gets around one of the basic mechanics of the game without having to still damaging your opponent. He allows you to not necessarily even have to attack to win the game, right? It gets around one of the core concepts of the game. The game is designed about fielding heroes, having them attack your opponent to do damage and kill them. Gobby directly gets around that. I like to look for characters that kind of do that kind of stuff. because I feel like those characters can be the ones that are the most abused. And people are seeing that. He has a couple different things that I like that go for him. He triggers off of sidekicks, which makes your sidekicks much more beneficial, because a lot of times having them in your field, they're great blockers, but you don't necessarily want to attack with them because you're getting minimal result for what you're doing. You're attacking them, pinging them for one, then they're going back in your use pile, which goes back in your bag, which dilutes your bag.
Correct.
This guy allows you to keep your sidekicks in the field, which gets them out of your dice bag, kind of thinning your deck out.
Correct.
And while they're there, he can damage for each of the guys that's there. So they get to do their damage to you without Avery having to lose anything. He's a three-cost die, so my favorite open is to try, you know, I roll four dice. If I roll a sidekick and three energy, you know, one of them's a question mark or a lightning bolt, boom. Field a sidekick, get one out of my bag, replace it with a Gavi, you know. And then I do that a couple, three times, and, you know, I've won games where I don't actually have to attack. You just field your Gavi three or four times, and they're dead.
Right.
And you always attack with Gavi. You always, because you don't want him in your field.
Right.
You want him either KO'd or back in your use pile so that you can roll him in, because where he does most damage is when he's rolling.
His actual ability is only triggered off of when fielded.
When he's fielding, yes.
So you need to get him out.
The thing I also like about Gavi is that he's really cheap to field. He's a 0-2-2, a 1-3-3, and a 1-5-5. 1-5-5 is great value.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, that's it's got to be one of the most powerful dice for one.
So, getting back into why I like Gavi, he's cheap, he comes out, he hits hard, he damages your opponent.
He would get around beast.
Right.
And you don't have to block.
Right. And that leads into our basic topic of the day, basic team building strategies and tactics. One of the things that I was mentioning that I like about Gavi is the fact that he's a three-cost die. I like characters. When I build my teams, I found that having lower-cost characters is really important to have on your team. Kind of the rule of thumb that I've been going by right now is half of my team is 4-cost or below. I think that 4-cost threshold is really important because that's the threshold of which you can buy rounds 1 and 2. Mm-hmm. You won't ever be able to buy a cost 5 or higher in the first two rounds of the game. And being able to allow yourself to purchase, add superheroes to your die bag is really important. I guess there's always an exception to that rule if you have certain things out, but as of right now...
I guess if in the weird case that you were to get 4 sidekick on your first turn and somehow block with all 4 on that turn,
right,
then you'd get 8 dice, but that's unbelievably rare, or if there was some kind of crazy global somehow.
Right. There's going to be some... In most of the games that I've been playing, if people get a sidekick or 2 in the first round, they'll re-roll them to try to get extra energy because they want the characters.
Yeah, and that's just... Yeah.
So my theory is... Have half your team 4-cost or below. I don't know. Is that something that you follow, or what are you...
Well, I think it's kind of a team-by-team basis. I can't really put a number on how many low-cost characters I have. I tend to see I've got at least 3 that are underneath 4 or less. But it depends on the mechanic. The mechanics I've been playing this last week have been a lot of draw decks.
Mm-hmm.
So I have, like, Beast, who will draw extra dice. Nova... who, when takes damage, gets an extra die.
Right.
So Nova is a 5-cost character. So he's kind of low. He's a little bit above. But if I'm getting extra dice, then it prevents me from just staying to the 4 and under.
Right.
Usually I'm rolling about 6 dice a turn,
right,
which helps me get to those higher characters,
right,
which is nice. But I'd say, yeah, 4 is not a bad rule of thumb. Mm. It's case-by-case basis. But I definitely would say I have the majority of my actual total dice allowed out of 20,
mm-hmm,
I'd say probably the majority are on my characters under 4.
Yeah.
I'm not going to run 4 dice on a 7-cost character.
No, yeah. And yeah, we'll get to dice placements and how many dice you place per character here in a second. I just want to quickly touch up on the fact that I think 2-cost characters are incredibly important to have on your team.
Yeah.
I seem to include at least 1 2-cost character on just about every team build I have. Because you always seem to get, especially late game, you always seem to end up with 2 extra energy. And if you don't have globals for them to trigger off of, or they're not the right kind of energy, it's always nice to have that little bit of a buffer to continually add dice to your bag.
Yeah, having 2-cost, I mean, there's only a handful of characters out there that are literally 2-cost characters.
Right.
So having one of those, a Beast, Black Widow, a Ghost Rider, and...
Low Rider, I like to call him Low Rider.
Low Rider.
He's a low-cost guy that doesn't do anything.
Yeah, so. Ghost Rider, Johnny Blaze, his actual ability says no special effects, Just a low-cost guy with good numbers.
Lowrider, baby. That guy's awesome.
I think that's hilarious. But besides the characters, there's also only one action card that is two.
Yeah.
Specifically, invulnerability.
Invulnerability.
Now, so if you get two energy, you're just sitting there like, oh, these are just wasted dice. So it's really nice to have at least one of those two cost cards in your deck.
Right.
Just for that off chance.
Exactly. I think that's important. But getting back to what you're saying with dice placement, I tend to build my teams just myself. I don't know if you follow this too, but I like to have half of my team dedicated to four or below. So I'll have four characters, four or below. And then I always use eight characters. We'll get into the theory about that in a second here. Four or higher, five or higher. And I will usually put three or four dice on each of my four cost characters. If I use three dice on each of my four cost characters, that allows me to put two dice on all of my other cost characters that are higher than that. Mm-hmm. And I use that as my basic matrix. I have four characters that have three dice each, which is 12 dice. And then I have eight dice to spread out over the other four characters. And sometimes I'll reduce or add, so some guys I only have on my team for one specific reason, like I'll pack a Loki Gem Keeper with just one die in case I'm going up against a specific team with somebody that I don't want to field. I don't think that you ever need to field more than one Loki Gem Keeper for a specific example.
Specifically with that Loki, it's almost detrimental to field him because he counters himself.
Right, right.
He says when fielded, you choose a character and then your opponent cannot field that character. However, you have to, for every time you field Loki, choose a new character.
Right.
So having multiple Lokis isn't necessarily a good thing.
Right, exactly. So if I'm only going to field one die of that specific character, then that gives me an extra die to pass on to someone else.
And usually I would consider him a counter character. And for counter characters, in my theory, you're not going to be using him to attack or defend. You only want him in case thing goes wrong, or something goes wrong, or something goes bad.
Right.
He's just extra buffer. He's not part of your team. He's just part of your counter strategy. Right.
Do you use a basic structure for when you're dice building? Like, I use, like I said, threes on all my fours or belows, and twos on everyone higher, and then I kind of play with that just within each specific team.
I like to have a minimum of two dice that on a two-cost character, for example, Beast, because I think my favorite first turn move is if I roll any sidekicks, I try to get four energy first turn, no matter what. If I hit the sidekick, I'll re-roll the energy. Because if you can buy two dice in a turn, it's huge, especially early. So that's what I try to do, be it a Ghost Rider, if I'm just trying to get a bunch of energy, I'm just trying to get two dice in a turn.
Right.
So I'll have either two dice on him, sometimes four if I want to do that two turns in a row and just pump myself full blockers.
Right.
But other than that, I've been noticing that I don't really get to the higher cost characters like a 7 or 6s very often. So I tend to use only two of those dice at most, if not one. If you're 6 and higher, I only like two of you.
Right.
5, I'll take 3.
Sure.
And 4 and below, I can go 4 or more.
I don't see why you'd ever play with more than one die on a 7 cost character. I mean, I've seen that the difference between a 7 cost character and everyone else is huge. Now, that might change as we get more sets coming out. But as of right now, there's not a lot of ways to get extra energy in the turn, you know, other than just rolling extra dice. And a lot of times, getting to that 7 cost die takes a few turns to get to ramp up to that many energy. And then you have to buy the die, and then by the time it gets into your bag and then into play, it never happens.
Right.
Hardly. Right now.
It's really hard to get it.
And that might change, again, as we get more sets and more characters that have more abilities that allow you to add more energy or allow you to reduce the cost of characters, to purchase. I don't know what kind of mechanics they're thinking of, but I would imagine that being able to recruit higher cost characters will be more possible later on. But as of right now, it's just not a real good strategy. I find I don't use any of the 7 cost guys.
Yeah.
I mean, they're amazing. Their powers are incredible, especially like Cyclops, if looks could kill.
Yeah.
But I just never get them. It's just, I'd rather spend my energy, if I have 7 energy, I'd rather spend my energy on littler guys that I can get out.
Yeah, and the hard thing is a lot of times you'll also roll sidekicks. When you're rolling that many dice to even get a 7, you roll either sidekicks, or you're rolling the energy and you'll be faced with, do you want to re-roll that double energy to actually get the character
instead?
And a lot of the times I find, hey, I would rather take a character for attacking right now or blocking right now.
Right.
So it's really hard to make that choice to decide, okay, I'm not fielding anybody's turn, I'm just taking a die that I might not see for 3-4 turns.
Right.
And then you got to roll.
Right, exactly.
It's just, it's hard.
When you're building your team, how many characters do you pack? I've seen a lot of people play five character teams, six character teams. I don't know about you, but I always build eight character teams. Always eight characters, always 20 dice.
Yeah.
I don't see the purpose of having less characters, unless dice. There's no drawback to having eight characters and 20 dice. I mean, it's not like you're going to get penalized for having it. It's not like you start with less life for having eight characters and 20 dice, right? The game allows you to have, in tournament rules now, we're talking tournament rules here, eight characters up to 20 dice.
Correct. If you want to break down into the actual math of it, mm-hmm. when fielding eight characters, the rule is states, when you have a character on your team as part of the deck, you have to at least have one die on it.
Correct.
So that's eight dice, so you have 12 other dice to work at.
Mm-hmm.
But when I field eight characters, that's still a lot of dice. Don't think of it as you're losing dice off your team. As I said before, I don't foresee any game where you're going to go through all 20 dice.
Sure, you never go through.
If you're not going to use a character, you might as well give yourself an option to use another character or another ability that might be there.
Right.
But getting back to the math on it, that still allows six characters with three dice each. Okay? Six times three is 18.
Sure.
And then there's your other two characters that just one die on each of them.
Right.
And the teams I like to feel, like I said before, you could have three attackers, three defenders, three dice on each of those, and then two counter characters with just like a Loki or a Professor X with just one die on him.
Right.
So I still think eight characters is always fantastic. I think you should always use the maximum amount of characters. You can always do it. It's the way that we've kind of been trained to play collectible card games over the past. You realize what strategies work, like with Magic, an Overpower, like we talked before. All those games, you can have a minimum of, let's say, like 60 cards, I think it was, in a lot of them.
Mm-hmm.
You always want to go with the minimum. Not that, you know, having more cards would, you know, help your deck out, but it thins your deck. It allows you to get to more dice.
You always want to use optimum, whatever optimum is.
Optimum. And I think eight characters is optimum.
Yeah.
Because it gives you the most advantage.
Most of the teams that I build actually are never, like, eight character ideas where I need all of those eight characters to do what I want to do. Most of the time, the game is so fast, you only need three or four characters to kind of revolve around your tactic or your strategy of what you're trying to do.
Right.
The other four characters are there simply to, as a what I call like a sideboard. In other games, they have cards that are called sideboard, which you can switch in and out based upon what your opponent is playing. This game has the sideboard built in already.
Mm-hmm.
So those other four characters are there as what you think are what you're going to be going up against. They're kind of counters to what you're going to be going up against. It's your plan B. If you only have one idea of what you're trying to do, and somebody has a counter for that, you're in trouble.
Correct.
Right? So you need to pack stuff that can help counteract your opponent's strategies to throw them off the ball.
Correct.
You know, or have a plan B of different ways to do things.
Yeah.
So I think that those other characters are there for that purpose.
Yeah, absolutely. And sometimes when, you know, if I'm not building like a counter character specifically, whatever my goal is, my deck is, I just look at, okay, what am I missing on this deck? And it's, you know, I don't have a three-cost character. I don't have a shield. I have too much fist or, you know, whatever it is. So I just throw on another character or a different character just for the fact of that random roll when I get all shields.
Right.
Or something like that.
And sometimes I'll pack a high-cost character as my end game, you know?
Correct.
If I get there, he's the way I win the game kind of a thing, you know? I'll just put him there.
Yeah, you're a heavy hitter. I completely agree.
If he's there and I happen to get him out in the game, something wacky happens and I'm able to get that early or whatnot, then I can win, you know?
Absolutely.
So I try to pack my win. I call it a win con, a win condition. So that helps. You've been talking a lot about different types of characters, what you call like counter characters and those types of things.
Mm-hmm.
You were telling me a little bit earlier about how you think characters break down. What is your idea of how, when you look at
characters? Yeah, so the set. So when looking at the set and characters, I think I like to break them down into three separate categories. I find a character is either an attacking character, a blocking character, or a counter character.
Mm-hmm.
And that has to do with a multiple of different factors, including the power of the die and the cost of the die and the attacking and the defending costs on the die specifics. But I find that if you throw them into three separate piles, it's easier when building a team, because then you say, okay, I just need to pull a couple of these piles, I pull from a couple of blockers, and then one or two counters to just level out my team in case I need it. I find they go into that. What do you think?
I agree. I find that there's a lot of aggressive characters, you know. There's different types of characters, like the aggro characters, which are designed to just continually attack with, you know. And then you've got your guys that you want to that trigger off of blocking or those types of abilities. And I think having a mix of those is probably the best idea. If you try to go all aggro or all defense, then you're limiting yourself in what you can do if somebody has a counter to that. So if you build an all blockers deck and I happen to run with, you know, Knucklehead or whatnot, well, that just blows your whole...
Right.
Strategy out the window.
Right. And I guess I should also specifically say, when breaking down this character, what is an attacking character? What I define as an attacking character is a character, when I roll him and field him, will attack that turn, no matter what.
Right.
Because I want him to attack, to do damage to my opponent,
right,
to kill a defender, or to be KO'd to my prep area so I get an extra die.
Right.
That's what I consider an attacker. What I consider a defender, he's a character that I'm going to field, and I'm never attacking with him.
Mm-hmm.
Unless it's the end of the game where I can overrun you, and he attacks, and I win the game.
Mm-hmm.
But I do the math at that point and say, oh, I need 10 damage. Hey, I happen to have 5 beasts here for 10 damage. I'll attack you with all
right.
5. Other than that, those beasts are never attacking, or my defending characters, they are there purposely to stop your incoming damage.
Right.
And then a counter character... usually what a counter character is he's a counter character because of his ability, and usually it's a while active ability.
Right.
While active means you have to be in the field. Now, you can either be in the field or attacking. I never want to lose that character, so he's there just to stay in my field and block when he can, but I'm not going to block and sacrifice him either.
Right.
I'd rather take damage than lose him and miss that possible fielding.
Sure.
So,
exactly.
For example, like we talked about Loki a lot this episode, or even Professor X, he gets really nasty with not allowing you to reroll, or one of his versions being that, another version being that you can't field characters.
Right.
Unless you're paying life.
Right. And that,
so,
that goes to characters that I like, personally. When I see a new set, I always look for powers and abilities that circumvent the basic rules of the game, right? Because I feel like those characters are the most powerful. Because you have the basic idea of the rules of the game, and the characters are supposed to act within those rules. And there are characters that are good at what they do within those parameters. But the characters that can circumvent certain rules of the game always tend to be the most powerful, right? Like I said, Gabi, right? He circumvents the ability to need to attack your opponent to kill them.
Right.
By just fielding him, he damages you straight up.
Yeah.
Don't have to do any. It gets around that certain. Professor X is another one of those guys. The rare Professor X says that while he's fielded, your opponent cannot field characters unless they pay 2 life. Right. Well, they have to field characters to win the game.
Right.
Right. So they're gonna take 2 damage every turn.
At some point.
It puts them on a clock. Right.
Correct.
So I mean, unless they decide not to field a character that turn, whatever. But you're severely hindering their ability to win the game without having to pay life.
Right.
Which gets around the rule of the game, because normally you can field all your characters without having to pay life. That's not a part of the rule of the game.
Right.
So, I love characters that do that kind of stuff.
Yeah, and what's fantastic about him is, that's not your team goal. It's to make your opponent take damage every turn.
Right.
You're still running your team like you want to run it.
Right.
You're attacking with your attackers, you're blocking with your blockers. He's just there, and if you're forcing your opponent to focus on your counter character, that's fantastic, because you're going to be destroying him all the other way.
Right.
Which makes him such a really interesting character.
There's a 7-cost Colossus. I wish he weren't 7-cost. If he were 6-cost, I'd put him on pretty much every one of my teams. But the fact that he's a 7 right now just makes him really hard to field.
Mm-hmm.
It's the rare, the Petor Rasputin. It says, while Colossus is active, at the end of your turn, each of your characters level 2 or higher deals 2 damage to your opponent. Again, it gets around a rule of the game. I don't have to attack you. I just have to have characters in my field, and it damages you just for being there. I could field my 2, I could field my Gabi, ping you for 3 or 4, and if my Gabi's level 2, my Colossus is level 2 or that, I ping you for another 4 without ever having to do anything.
You're right.
I think it's incredible.
Yeah, that's pretty disgusting.
Real quick, let's just touch on the final part of team building. You always have to bring some actions, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then the global abilities are a big part of the game, which we can probably go into more depth in detail and how we use them, certain combos, but I know choosing which characters you put on your team can be affected by what kind of globals they come with. You were stating last episode that you tend to always field the same two actions. Is that still the same now that you've been playing more games, or have you found that that's kind of changing?
It kind of changes a little bit. I have developed a couple of extra strategies when I'm actually, like with Nova, when we're talking about the drawing mechanic and drawing dice, I've tried to use the actually damaging my own Nova. And there's an action card, Force Beam, that says deal one damage to each character.
Sure.
I think that's pretty fun because it gets rid of all their sidekicks, it gets rid of my sidekicks, which isn't necessarily a bad thing because it's more dice in my deck. So I realize that's not a very bad card. So I'm using Force Beam a little more, and I think it's very interesting to hurt yourself on purpose, or even Hulk. Hulk says when he takes damage, he does really cool stuff on multiple different versions, depending on which
Right.
one. He does damage to you, he knocks out a character,
Right.
but he just, you don't want to make Hulk angry.
Right,
So,
exactly.
but specifically when I build teams, I don't build teams around action. I build teams around what you cannot purchase from me.
Okay.
So I build my characters, and because I can never guess what your team is, I don't want to help your team. So, and if I build around an action, well, guess what? If you buy that action die from me before I can get it, let's say you go first turn, and you take action die first turn, I take my action die second turn, you take the third action die that third turn, I just built the whole deck around one die that I don't even get. So I tend to use these just as buffers, and most of the time, the strategy I use is I just choose an action die that I don't think is going to help my opponent. And I just choose not to build, to purchase actions at all for most of the time.
Yeah, I find that when it comes to actions, depending on the deck, like if you're building the Gobby Firestorm deck, you're obviously going to want to pack Power Bolt just because it's extra direct damage that you can do without having to attack, things like that. I like running with invulnerability just because it's a two-cost die, and it gives you an extra two-cost die out there. Once you're done buying all your characters, you late game, you're spending your energy to field your characters, and you've got, let's say, two extra energy left over. Oh, well, I guess I can grab an invul. And it 50% of the time, it's going to give you two energy for it. It also has a pretty cool basic global, which adds plus one to attack for each lightning bolt that you pay. So you can always use that late game too, just to finish off your opponent if you need that extra damage. I like it. I don't need to buy the die. I like that it's there if I need to buy it. And then I trigger the global most of the time.
Yeah, and sometimes I'll build teams around the global ability. I've thought about direct damage teams, like pretty Knucklehead, just with the invulnerability card that you said. I'll never buy it, but I'll use it with that die because you get a Knucklehead and you have some energy, or excuse me, some lightning bolts, and then he's attacking you for 10, 11. There's nothing you can do about it. That's pretty awesome. Game's over in two turns.
Now, we are specifically talking about the Wolverine Super Rare Knucklehead, which states that when he attacks alone, he cannot be blocked.
Correct.
Let's just state that.
Correct. So I think globals is the other really important element of the game. Whenever I build my decks, I think about what global that I have would help my opponent. So unless that global ability will help me, I don't like to have characters that have global abilities personally, because it's could be counterintuitive. So unless I'm planned on using a global, I would prefer characters without globals.
I mean, it's nice that sometimes they print these global abilities on really good characters. It's kind of a double-edged sword. It's like, well, if you want to field this guy, you're going to have to pack it, and this global can be used against you, which I think is a nice little way to balance out the game.
Yeah, it balances. Specifically, one of those balanced global characters would be Venom. Rare Venom says when he's fielded, your opponent gets minus two attack, minus two defense for each fist character they have, for
Each non-fist.
non-fist, excuse me, which is super powerful. The nice thing is he has a global ability that says you can pay to turn any fist character down to level one. So you can always get that Venom down to level one, making him a lot easier to knock
To
out.
kill.
So he's really powerful. Otherwise, he'd be super powerful.
No, he's great. He's one of the guys I really like. I don't have him. I can't wait to get him so I can put him on a team, because I think that team can be a good team. But yeah, so that's basically what our thoughts are kind of there with basic team strategy. So let's go to the wrap-up here. So in wrap-up, we basically like 8 characters, always. I don't see why you wouldn't 8, you know, I like 8
just
characters.
Options. The name of the game is options and adaptability.
20 dice, yep. I prefer to build my teams with half of my guys 4 cost or below. Depending on the team, there's always going to be exceptions. JP usually builds teams with 2 or 3 4 cost or belows, but you like to draw teams that draw dice.
Correct.
But I'd like to know what you think. What are your thoughts? Are we totally off our rocker? You know, do you really see the benefit of having less than 8 characters and 20 dice? Like, if you consistently build your teams with less than 8 characters and you're having a lot of success, you know, let us know. Why do you like building that way versus what we suggest? Well, we always want to hear what you have to say.
Right.
Which brings us up to our last portion, which is our comments and questions. We encourage everyone to send us questions. If you have any specific questions on characters, thoughts, ideas, again, if you agree or disagree with us, we'd love to hear about it. You can leave us questions directly on our Facebook page, which is KO to Prep Area. We also have a Twitter, at KO to Prep Area. You can look for us on iTunes. We are now listed on iTunes. You can go subscribe to our podcast at KO to Prep Area on iTunes. We've got some comments that we posted when we posted our first episode up on YouTube. I thought it was a little interesting that the only comments we got were based on a 30-second snippet of what JP was saying. What got him into the game was an old, obscure Marvel card game called Overpower.
Yeah.
Fantastic. Something he mentioned in passing, and we got comments on that more than anything else, which I thought was hilarious.
Yeah, well, it's a fantastic game, and people who played it, I think, agree. It's one of the best, and I'm still disappointed that it got canceled so
well,
fast.
It was made by Topps, which didn't make card games. You know, they weren't known for that. Way back in the 90s, if you don't know this game, it's a very early card game, collectible card game. It came out back in the mid-90s, right when Magic the Gathering was getting started. Very basic. It has great IP properties. It was based on Marvel, DC Comics, Indie Comics. I used to play it. It was fun. It didn't last very long. I think it was only around for like 2 years.
Yeah, well, what I enjoyed a lot about it is it was a really quick game.
Yeah.
We would play a lot of best of three matches.
Right.
And the best of three, that's kind of why I like this game so much, mm-hmm. too. Quick, fast games, which you have to build in the strategy too.
Right.
And it's all superheroes, man.
Right.
That's why, I think this is probably the closest game to Overpower since Overpower, actually.
Well, I guess.
It's different with dice, but...
Sure. But it's a fun game, and if you ever want to play it, it's probably really cheap to grab your hand on a bunch of cards.
Yeah.
So it's really not hard to get into it. But for now, we're going to talk about what we want to go into our next episode. Next episode, we're going to specifically discuss some more team building. We're going to show you some teams that we played. But more importantly, if you're tired of getting beaten by the Gobby Firestorm deck, if your friends keep playing Gobby and crushing you with it, and you're getting frustrated, we're going to show you a team and tactics on how to specifically beat the Gobby Firestorm deck. But until then, remember to
KO to Prep Area.